This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Asia Pacific Currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links.
Good morning. It's spot on 9 o'clock and you're with your very punctual Asia Pacific Currents, the theme song in there, right on the dot of nine. I'm Diana Beaumont.
And I'm Pierre Morrow. And of course, we're always on time. We're not only accurate on time, but we're always accurate on politics as well, aren't we?
Completely. We've got this morning our usual lineup of very detailed news items from around the Asia region reporting incidents of workers' struggle and the repression of workers around our region. And then we'll be following our news roundup this morning with an interview with Abhinav Finnair, who is from a workers' newspaper, Bigul, in Delhi in India. He recorded with me during the week a report back about a forum that was held in Mumbai, India, entitled Working Class Movement in the Age of Globalization. During the interview, he spoke specifically about new ideas for organizing workers in India and about how to tackle some of the unions in India that are organizing along religious lines on a fascist agenda. That coming up at about 9:15 this morning.
Sounds fantastic. And there's lots happened in India in the last few years, certainly. And of course, first of all, thanks to Solidarity Breakfast for a very interesting show. And of course, Asia Pacific Currents is brought to you every week by Australia Asia Worker Links. And if you know, contact Australia Asia Worker Links, you can contact us on
9663 7277 during the week, or you can go to our website at aawl.org.au. And of course, a reminder that this program is podcast every week, so you can download a copy of the show from 3CR's website, 3cr.org.au, or find it on Australia Asia Worker Links website to share it with friends and comrades around the world.
Beautiful, and certainly a hello to anyone who is listening as a podcast. Anyway, we'll go straight into the main news because we do have the interview later on is a bit over 14 minutes, so it's a bit of a long one, so we better go for it. And we start with West Asia, where unionists in Iran are still fighting under heavy repression. We've got news then since earlier this month, more than 700 workers at the Sepahan cement factory have been on strike over pay and conditions. And one of the big issues is that these workers are employed under a subcontracting arrangement and receive lower wages and have worse conditions than the full-time employees, which is something very common around the world. And at the same time that these workers have been on strike, we've heard that Reza Shahabi, a leading member of Tehran and suburbs Vahed Bus Company, has had his sentence of 6 years in jail, a five-year ban on union activity, and a fine of over $3,000 upheld by the Court of Appeals in Iran. The international campaign to free Reza continues.
And workers and unions in Pakistan are continuing to protest against the use of anti-terror laws to convict worker activists who've been involved in protest action to improve their working conditions and their pay. In Pakistan, on the 19th of July, an international day of action was marked in Karachi with a forum that brought together different unions to discuss how best to respond to this attack on all working people. Of course, Pakistan isn't the only country using anti-terror legislation and other security legislation against workers, so do go to Australia Asia Worker Links website for more information about this campaign.
And hopefully we'll get a sometime next week, given that the forum was 2 days ago, we'll get a bit of a report back on how it went. We actually go to India now, where, again, it's interesting that we've got this interview already lined up looking at organising India, because workers at the Maruti Suzuki factory in the large industrial area of Gurgaon, just outside of New Delhi, and we've brought you lots of information about this last year, took action to defend one of their colleagues earlier this week. And this became quite a major incident at the factory, and quite a number of people were hospitalised. And it seems that this continued arrest within the workforce is all about trying to increase the organisation and actually humanise the working conditions inside the factory. If you go to our website, I don't think it's actually up, but I think it'll be in the next couple of days, you will actually read a statement by the union about the latest incidents at the Maruti Suzuki factory.
And that's a very timely news item, because it's yet another dispute in the auto sector, which in countries around the world is restructuring in response to the globalisation of that industry. Obviously, this week here in Melbourne, we've had the announcement of more than 400 job cuts from Geelong and Broadmeadows. And this question of how auto workers are organising internationally to fight against the way workers are thrown on the scrap heap in this restructuring process is so important. So do keep up to date with that Maruti Suzuki dispute in India and disputes around the world in the auto sector, because it's only if workers can organise internationally that they'll effectively fight for their interests in that industry.
That's right, that's right. And I think that's a great comment. I'll actually come up with one of the last news item, or the second last news item, about a public meeting that we're having in the next few weeks about that very same issue.
Do you want to announce that now? We can announce it again at the end of the show.
Yeah, we might as well announce it now. I think you've got it.
Do I? What a surprise. yes, I do. So on Wednesday, the 1st of August, at Trades Hall at 6 p.m, Australia Asia Worker Links will be having a meeting on this question of how to organise internationally in industries where we all work. The airline industry in Australia and the rest of Asia is also undergoing a phase of major restructuring, like the auto sector is. And there have been job losses at Qantas, Japan Airlines and Philippine Airlines. There's also been attacks on airline workers in Turkey, where the government is seeking to make strikes illegal in that sector. Thousands of workers at Philippine Airlines have been on their picket line for 10 months, so their struggle is still very urgently in need of solidarity. But of course, these airline companies are global companies, and to fight for our jobs and conditions, we as workers must also fight globally. So Australia Asia Worker Links has called this meeting to discuss the planning of a global international day of action. All are welcome. It's at 6 p.m. Wednesday, the 1st of August, in the Evatt Room at Trades Hall, which is on Lygon Street in Carlton.
That's right. Very important. It'll be very interesting to see, how we get there, and then basically how to organise it. I think we've lost track now. What numbers we? I think it's still your.
Well, we were on India, and we've got two stories from India this morning. So I'll keep going with that. This is a news item from the education sector, which of course I'm personally interested in as a teacher. In India, the All India Primary Teachers Federation has severely criticised the government for privatising primary education by expanding its public-private partnership scheme for schools. The Teachers Federation claims that these PPPs in education will commercialise education and undermine efforts to achieve education for all, which we all know is an urgent priority in India. The government of India has planned to set up 6,000 model schools in the country, 2,500 of which will be set up as PPPs. The act that accompanies this has stated that each school will admit 25% of children belonging to the economically underprivileged sections of Indian society, and that these school children's fees will be paid by the relevant state government. But the union's concern is that these private public schools have been avoiding this obligation to admit lower SES students to date. The All India Primary Teachers Federation has put out this statement. by opening school education to commercialisation, the government goes against the Supreme Court's view that education cannot be commercial in nature. The Teachers Federation is firmly opposed to the Government of India's commercialisation of education through PPPs, and it demands that all PPP plans be immediately abandoned. So there we can see that the privatisation of education is part of this broad raft of neoliberal economic policies, and it's happening even in countries like India, where education for the poorest in society is so desperately needed.
And I wish the Supreme Court here in Australia would say you can't commercialise education with all the private schools that we have. But anyway, that's another story for another program. But it's just on 9:10 here on Asia Pacific Current on 3CR Radio. We've just got three more stories for our news roundup. We actually moved to Bangladesh, where unfortunately we have to bring you the news that a 16-year-old was crushed to death at the shipbreaking yards in Chittagong. Khurshed Alams was 16-year-old. He went to work at the shipyards because his family was poor. They were working class family. He lied about his age, although he was obviously underage. And it seems that the trend in the shipbreaking yards in Chittagong is basically to put all the underage workers at night, because knowing that the very, very few inspectors there are will actually never come at night anyway. So poor Khurshed Alam was actually crushed at 3:30 in the morning of July the 17th. So our best wishes go to his family.
And in addition to the ongoing fight to free political prisoners in Thailand, there are also reports that the Thai government is turning a blind eye to modern slavery amongst workers. Of the hundreds of thousands of Burmese migrants arriving in Thailand looking for work and a better life, not all of them are lucky enough to succeed. Too many of them are caught in the net of human traffickers and are sold into slavery, ending up on fishing boats or on construction sites. There's no protection for them, least of all when they fall sick and they need the support of the government welfare system. But the Thai government stands accused of doing nothing about these allegations of the human rights abuses of Burmese migrant workers in Thailand.
And we've brought you lots of news items about that in the last few months. And our last item is an event that's coming up here in Melbourne, although it's an international commemoration. Basically, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Remember the terrible war crimes of the nuclear bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. There is going to be a peace concert here in Melbourne. I'm sure there's lots of other events all around the world, but here in Melbourne, it's going to be Indigenous and International Performance presented by Japanese for Peace, and it's going to be on the Sunday, the 5th of August, 3 p.m. at the show at the Theatrette at the State Library in Swanston Street, Melbourne. And that's the end of the news item that we have. Dana, we'll go for a quick community announcement, then we'll be back for our interview.
Yes, our interview this morning will be about organising workers in India. It's now 9:13.
This is Irene Bolger, former Secretary of the Nurses Federation in Victoria. Throughout the nurses dispute in 1986 and the waterfront dispute in 1998, 3CR was always there, broadcasting the voices of workers in struggle.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, and we're broadcasting live from the Bay to Chicken Strike here in Melbourne.
We've just seen all of the thousands of nurses walk through to their meeting and people from different unions showing their solidarity.
3CR. Radio for the workers, by the workers, since 1976.
It's just 9:14 here on Asia Pacific Currents and 3CR Radio. Asia Pacific Currents is brought to you every week by Australia Asia Worker Links.
And now for our interview for this morning. Last month, a discussion forum was held in Mumbai, India, entitled Polemic, with the subtitle Working Class Movement in the Age of Globalisation, Problems and Challenges. It was a gathering of left intellectuals, workers, activists and students who discussed the challenges of organising the vast majority of workers who don't hold stable, permanent jobs in industrial workplaces, and about the need for a revolutionary workers' party to advance workers' interests in India. There were speakers at the forum about disputes such as the Maruti Suzuki auto strike, which we reported on this morning. It actually happened last year. And on Monday last week, I spoke to Abhinav Finnar, who is from the workers' newspaper Bigul in Delhi. He spoke at the forum and gave me a report. And in his report, he focused specifically on the idea of organising workers into neighbourhood unions instead of in their workplaces because they don't have stable fixed work. And he also discussed how India's biggest union, BMS, is dividing workers along religious lines. But first, he began by telling me what were the main issues discussed at the forum.
So the main issue that came out of the discussion was that we have to make a change in the strategy and tactics of organizing the workers, especially in the third world countries. For example, if we go by data, 93% of Indian working class works in unorganized or informal sector. According to the census data of India, according to National Sample Survey of India, the figure is 94%. So only 6% workers work on permanent contract, who can be found on factory floor, organized on the factory floor, and a part of this 6% is very well paid. You can call it labor aristocracy. Mm-hmm. And in most of the cases, the organized trade unions who represent this elite working class is not interested in raising the issues which are troubling the contract workers, casual workers, and day wagers. There are people who are not associated any party or any mainstream trade union, but people who are honest and politically active in the workers' movement. And they have been organizing the unorganized sector workers way from 1980s itself. Shankar Guhan Yogi was their leader, who was murdered by one of the goons of corporate houses. But they showed us the way, Chhattisgarh Mukti Morcha. They did it empirically, not theoretically. There was no theoretical paradigm which they put forward to organize the informal workers. It was the concrete conditions of the Chhattisgarh mines which prompted them to organize the workers on neighborhood basis. In contrast to the factory-based organization, they went to the neighborhoods of the workers. They organized the workers, neighborhood-based unions in the neighborhoods of the workers, and then they came to factory to raise their economic demands and other demands.
Right. And can you tell us a bit more about why they decided to use a neighborhood-based organizing strategy?
Because most of the workers in the mines and metallurgy sector, they were not static. It was very hard to organize. If you organize 1,000 workers in a mine, within a year, 80% of the composition of that workforce will change. 80% of workers will go to other mines or other sectors or other occupations. Only 20% usually remains there. So if you put all your hard work in organizing those workers who are working in the mines on contract basis, and then 80% of the workers move out in search of better employment, or they are kicked out of their employment, fired by the employers, in whatever case, you have this problem of reorganizing the workers again, reorganizing the new workforce again.
And
but most of the workers who move out of their workplaces stay in the same region. They put up in the same region. So the neighborhood is comparatively less mobile and less dynamic and less volatile.
And so if
organize
these...
them on the neighborhood, yeah.
Yeah, if the... organization is not happening in one workplace, then obviously the action that workers are going to take will be different. What kind of activities does a neighborhood union undertake compared to a union that's based in one workplace or a few workplaces?
Yeah, the neighborhood-based union will take up all the issues which were used to be raised by the factory-based unions. But in addition to that, it is capable of raising issues which are not factory-based, not entirely economic in their nature. They are a little bit more political. For example, they can raise the issues of the civil rights of the workers and the issues pertaining to the conditions of living in their neighborhood, which puts the state into the dock and the entire class of employers into the dock instead of putting a particular employer in, into the dock. So it provides more political potential, the neighborhood-based unions. And since most of the factory units have, their size has decreased. For example, 80% of the total manufacturing units in India hires less than 50 workers. So if one industrial unit hires 80% of the industrial units hire less than 50 workers, then it's very difficult to organize the workers on factory basis. So what we are trying to do is to organize the workers on a neighborhood basis. And if any issue comes up in any particular factory, the entire industrial area comes to a halt. If an issue comes in one of the factories, for example, in Delhi, we have this industrial area in Jilmil. It is called Jilmil Industrial Area. So most of the factory units there are very small or medium size. So what we have done there is we have organized the workers on their neighborhood basis, and if which is very near to the industrial area, and if any issue comes up in any particular factory, we organize a strike on the in the entire industrial area. So what happens is that particular factory comes under pressure from other factory owners. They pressurize that factory owner, which is facing this issue, to strike a compromise, strike a deal with the workers, because it becomes very difficult for all factory owners to continue.
Yes, so and if workers do take that kind of unified action involving many, many workplaces to protest the conditions in one factory or one workplace, are there any penalties put on the other workers who take part? Here in Australia, there are very strict laws on what we call secondary boycott. It's illegal to go on strike in your workplace in solidarity with others. What kind of ramifications can these workers expect if they take widespread strike action in support of other workplaces? Let's say in northern India where you work.
Yeah, there is no formal law which could which can restrict the workers from showing solidarity by halting work in their workplace in solidarity with some other factory workers. There is no formal law which can restrict them, but informally the police and the bureaucratic apparatus tries to suppress the workers of the other factories who have gone on a strike in demonstration of solidarity with other factory workers. But if the workers are, there is a consolidated organization of workers in the neighborhood basis, then it becomes very hard for the state to break that organization, because the workers work for 8, 10 or 12 hours in factory together, all the time together in the neighborhood. So there is a sense of unity and a sense of belonging amongst them. So in the initial stage, it is very difficult to organize the workers in the neighborhood basis, because you have to organize them politically. Mm. And political organization is very difficult among Indian workers. Class consciousness is, not at par with the workers of other advanced countries.
Well, we have problems with political consciousness with workers in Australia, I can assure you that. We're speaking to Abhinav Finna, who's from the workers' newspaper Bigul in northern India. Abhinav, I wanted to ask you now about established trade unions in India and some of the central trade unions. One of the problems that was discussed at your forum, the working class movement in the age of globalization, was that some trade unions in India use religion and caste to divide workers. Can you tell us a bit about this problem, and how do you think progressive workers' movements can organise against this?
There is only one trade union, in fact, which tries to, divide workers on caste lines and religious lines. This is this union is BMS, Mazdoor Sangh. This Bharatiya Mazdoor Sangh is affiliated with Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, which is a fascist organization in India, and its electoral wing is Bharatiya Janata Party. So they represent, the fascist trend in Indian politics, the right-wing trend in the Indian politics.
Right, and how big is it?
It's the right now it's the biggest union, But the BNS, it has just surpassed last year the this revisionist trade union affiliated with Communist Party of India Marxist, C2. But the thing which brings relief to us, the fact which brings relief to us, is that all of these central trade union federations, they are active in only hardly 7 to 8% of the total workers of India.
And so can you explain to us...
93%...
Can you explain how is this trade union fascist and the political party it's associated with?
First of all, for example, the fascist trade union, BNS, it uses the religious divide, especially the religious divide among the workers, and in some places, caste and regional divide among workers to divide the working class. They are more focused on organizing Hindu workers. And their main emphasis is organize the Hindu workers. They also run reform work among them and different kind of, strategies to create a support base among the Hindu workers. Apart from that, they, try to relegate the facet of class struggle to the oblivion. They try to bring this communal consciousness among them. They organize a small, money pool. In the working class neighborhood, which acts as a shock absorber in situations of recession, layoffs, and lockouts. In those cases, they provide economic help on interest. They provide credit to workers on interest, so that this the impact of recession and impact of depression can be, it can be diluted. So they try. The exact strategies which the Italian fascist applied, and after that the National Socialists of Germany applied, they create what we call in India committee. Committee is a financial entity which takes regular economic contributions from its members and creates some money pool, and it gives workers in depressed credit on interest, which is very high interest. It becomes a very profit-making enterprise. So it creates a shock absorber, a buffer zone in which unemployed workers or fired workers cannot live with dignity, but they are not allowed to die. They live in destitution and near starvation. So it creates a defense line for the capitalist system in the form of these kind of ostensibly reformist measures. And they employ a lot of similar tactics which were employed by the Italian and German fascists in Nazi party. Apart from that, they also show clear-cut support for the neoliberal policies, and they argue on record that the problem for the working class is not the introduction of neoliberal policies and policies of privatization, and the private sector will provide jobs, and the private sector will... And there is a nationalist rhetoric involved here also. They constantly talk about the development of the nation, progress of the nation, India becoming a superpower, economic superpower and military superpower. And they propagate these kinds of ideas among the working class constantly. So the basic issue the workers are facing right now, the introduction of neoliberal policies after 1990 and the problems which the workers have faced since then, they try to, dilute this issue of neoliberal policy. They never talk about it. They just talk about the organization of workers on communal lines, Hindu workers supporting Hindu workers, and there is a kind of apartheid in areas where these unions are dominant. In the neighborhoods of the workers, Muslim workers live in different part of the working class neighborhood, Hindu workers live in different part of the working class neighborhood. So they are very dangerous trend in Indian working class movement.
Yes, just another factor dividing workers. My last question, yes, Abhinav, was about the forum that you held recently. Can you tell us about some of the priorities that were identified for the progressive left workers movement in India?
The issues which came up in the forum, it was very clear that most of the honest trade union organizations and workers organizations are thinking about the challenges and problems of organizing the unorganized. The unorganized sector workers and informal workers, and most of us are faced with this crisis only right now, because most of the people in Indian communist movement, they are not very concerned with workers. Most of the ML parties, they are more concerned with the peasant issues, and even if we talk about the peasant issues, they are more concerned with the capitalist farmers. For example, they fight for the minimum support price, which which is for the benefit of only 2 or 3% upper class farmers. These were the basic problems which we are facing. And in that context, we came to the conclusion that the strategy of organizing workers on the neighborhood basis and then go to factory, instead of first organizing them in the factory and then come to the neighborhood, we need to go to the neighborhood from the factory gates and then come back to the factory gates, so that the organization, neighborhood-based organization, can enforce the capitalist of a particular industrial sector or particular industrial area to, accept our demand.
Right. Well, sorry to cut the conversation off here, but we've run out of time. We've been speaking to Abhinav Finna, who's from the workers' newspaper Bigul in northern India, who was telling us about some of the discussions that took place at the recent forum, Working Class Movement in the Age of Globalization, convened by Polemic in Mumbai in India. Abhinav, thank you so much for today's report.
Thanks.
And we're actually at the end of the program. I think one clock shows that we've got about 30 seconds to go. And that was, well done, Dana. That was a very interesting interview. And it really shows how dynamic the political situation is in India, and really some of the issues that Abhinav was talking about, you know, are really relevant to here as well. And I think I made a comment off air, and I said, it's a shame there's so little resonance. There's so little discussion of some of these issues here in Australia, and some of the linkages, how workers in other countries are facing the same issues and, you know, linking up. I mean, that is the issue, isn't it?
Yeah, and we limit ourselves so severely by just feuding with one employer at a time. If we can take some lessons from movements like India, where workers in multiple workplaces go out together in solidarity and fight for their common interests, so much more powerful. So some lessons there from India. But as Pierre said, that's all we've got time for this morning on Asia Pacific Currents.
No, we haven't. There's one
little
bit I'll have to
go ahead.
The public meeting, which is all about organising.
Yeah, I was going to announce it. We think alike. We just got one big AAWL brain. But if you are interested in these questions of organising across industries and organising across countries, then do come to Australia Asia Worker Link's next public meeting on organising globally in the airline industry, 6 p.m. on Wednesday, the 1st of August at Trades Hall. More information on our website, aawl.org.au. But that's all from me, Diana Beaumont.
And that's all from me, Pierre Morrow. You've been listening to Asia Pacific Currents, brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links here on your favourite community radio station, 3CR Radio. And hopefully the Connolly Association will be here very soon after these community announcements.